Whatever the weather, we're in this together. I love you now, and I'll love you forever.
Welcome to For the Love of Weather. This is the podcast where we explore the Earth's atmosphere and how we are all connected through the weather and climate. We are your hosts. I'm Gemma.
Hi, and I'm Aisling. We're both meteorologists and weather presenters, and we just simply love chatting about the weather, and we always hope that you leave each episode loving the weather just a little bit more and learning something new about how the weather and climate can impact our daily lives. We have a super, super duper exciting forecast today, all the way from Australia. And, you know, well done to all of us for getting into the right time zone at the same time. I don't think we did really well. But please welcome Jessica Braithwaite to the podcast. Jessica is a meteorology lover, but you're a presenter for Nine News. But I think if you look into a little bit more about what you do, my goodness, do you sing when you sing? You smile all the way when you're singing away doing something. And you've recently authored a new book, Whatever the Weather, We're in This Together. And that's where I came across you on Instagram. And I tell you, this little book has just broken my heart with all sorts of tears and smiles. It's so lovely. But you're no stranger to TV. You've done Sky News, 10 Eyewitness News, Totally Wild, Studio 10. 10 Late News, should we go on, chat show presenter? I've seen you present stuff for tennis. And my all-time favourite, I genuinely was bopping away to your single, I Still Get Excited for Christmas. It's fantastic, and it will stay in my house this year and forevermore. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, Jessica.
Oh my goodness, thank you so much for that just fun introduction. That's just so lovely of you. And honestly, thank you. I'm just so thrilled when you guys popped onto my Instagram feed, because I'm just absolutely, I have been delighted to go through the back catalogue of your podcast episodes and listening to all the incredible people that you speak to. I've been telling everyone at Nine News about you guys, and I'm like, oh my God, and there's this lady that's invented these welly walks, and another lady that's doing the sustainability with the temperate rainforests, and we're looking up where our temperate rainforests are in Australia. And I've just loved meeting and connecting with you guys. So thank you.
Oh gosh, I feel like we've got a little introduction there. Thanks. That's so kind. But it is actually really tricky to start this podcast, because we normally start by asking, where did you get your first spark of joy from? Yes. But I honestly couldn't figure out whether to ask you about music or weather or writing or expressing yourself or skateboarding or whatever.
Oh my God.
We know you broke your arm.
Yes, my goodness. And I've got the scar to show for it now too. Oh. Yeah, that was a fun trip to hospital, that one.
Oh, never fun, is it? But I think maybe we'll start with, I think we're going to start with the weather. So tell us, where did your first little spark of joy come from that you thought, gosh, you know, I might just like to talk about this? And actually, what brought you then to be standing in front of everybody and telling them about the thing you love?
It's so funny, because I've been thinking a lot about that and early memories of weather as well in the process of writing this book. And it's funny, because you don't know at the time, I guess, that these moments will end up being like formative moments in your life. But I have this memory. I must have been like, I think maybe 4. And so I grew up in Mount Gambier, which is a little town right down the bottom of Australia. So it's very wet, very cold, rains all the time. And I know that's not like most people's image of Australia with the, you know, the outback and the sun. But I've got this memory of running around my backyard with an empty ice cream bucket collecting hail. And I just loved this hail, like this magical, wonderful, shiny, you know, stuff is falling from the sky. And I was racing around collecting this hail. And I remember just being so fascinated by that. And then growing up having this love of weather, you know, and rain in particular, like the sound of rain on the roof is obviously just so soothing. But then I'd lie in bed and listen to the rain, and then I'd go out and like, I want to run in the rain, or I want to be in the rain. I loved my poor parents, because, you know, as I said, it rains a lot in Mount Gambier, so we would often be playing sport in the rain. So I loved playing hockey and netball and that kind of thing. So it was definitely always part of my, the way that I would experience the world, I think. And then that sort of shaped, and I've always loved telling stories as well. That's kind of the other part of my I guess, my personality. And so then when I went to uni, I don't know how it works in the UK. In Australia, you could sort of pick your preferences of what course you want to study, but you have to pick, put them in order. And so my first preference was journalism, and my second preference was environmental management. And I think it's funny looking back now, because without knowing it, I've kind of ending up with a career that is basically a combination of those two things. So although I would never have known it, you know, at the time.
Oh, I know. Isn't it funny how you can just end up on this little path? The heart takes you where it wants to go, doesn't it?
We can't join the dots until you look back, but it's awesome. It's awesome where it leads.
So I do have a question for you. So, you know, obviously the weather and climate conversation has massively shifted, and probably in the time that you've been presenting about how we talk about weather, how we talk climate, and we have attribution studies now and all this sort of stuff. But I don't really know anything about how that conversation has changed in Australia. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's changing a lot even now, because I think we are collectively broadening our understanding a little bit. Like in Australia, I think initially we've always had a really good understanding of those really tangible, fires, floods, droughts, heat waves. There's this famous Australian poem about Australia being, she says, I love a sunburned country, the land of drought and flooding rains. And we already were the land of drought and flooding rains. And so now that that's kind of being supercharged, we've always had a strong awareness of that. That is evolving, because I think we're now starting to see some of the less things that we hadn't thought about as much. Like where I am in Adelaide at the moment, it's hard to even talk about, but a few months back towards the start of this year, I live on the beach, and we started to see these animals just started washing up dead on the shore. Like fishes, everything from tiny little fishes and starfish and seahorses all the way through to dolphins and sharks. And we were like, no one really knew what was going on. And then it came about that we were in the midst of this algae bloom, that they've called an algal bloom. And it was initially, they thought, oh, maybe it will last a couple of weeks or a couple of months. And now it's been about 6 months. And now they're saying maybe it might last a couple of years. And they just don't know. It's sort of because we've never experienced it before. And the more we learn about it, the more we're learning how climate change is impacting these kinds of events. And so we're sort of looking back, and we can, again, looking back and joining the dots, but knowing that we had some record floods a couple of years ago that would have washed a whole bunch of nutrients down into the water, which was then followed by, we've had a marine heat wave where our ocean temperatures have been about 2.5 degrees above average. And so that's allowed this algae to, it's kind of like a different environment for that algae to grow in. And so these other kind of ways that we're starting to experience the repercussions of climate change, it feels like we're entering a new, like pretty, it's very scary, because we're entering a new level of, this is our way of life. You know, we're beach, like I swim in the beach every day, and I've stopped swimming. You know, our kindy kids can't go to the beach at the moment. Like we normally have like a beach day for our kindy at the end of, that's like preschool at the end of year, and they're not doing it this year. And so it's things like that that you start to think about, oh my God, like, this is, you know, this is our children, our life, our way of life, and our children. And so it's quite a depressing answer to your question.
It's not really. No, not at all. And actually, do you know, years ago when I started forecasting, I think at the time the Australian continent was warming the fastest out of the continents. That's what the data was saying at the time. This was like 15 years ago. But I mean, the reality is it's warming everywhere. And it is the reality. And, you know, that is part of the job, isn't it? It can make it hard at the end of the day when you're like, but I want to give you the weather forecast, but also this stuff is happening and it's tricky.
It's hard, you know, and it's hard when you're delivering those forecasts, that if it's a forecast that you have, like, because I've been presenting weather for like, what, I don't know, 15, probably a lot more than 15. So it's a long time, 15 years. And when you're delivering a forecast that you've never delivered before, which I'm sure you guys would have experienced, that you're looking at a system coming in and you're actually going, I've never seen anything like this before. I've never heard that word used before, or I've never said this number before. Like I remember, you know, when I gave my, the first time I had to give like a 48 degree, I'd never forecasted 48 degrees before. And I remember being on air that night, just being like, finding it really hard to say the numbers. And I'm sure you guys would have had your experiences of that as well.
We had that a few years ago, yeah, when we reached 40 degrees here in the UK for the first time. And when we talk amongst our peers about that, everyone has the same memory of how it felt, how emotional it was, how we couldn't believe the fact that we were saying 40 degrees in the UK. And it wasn't just one place. It was like a number of places in the UK that saw that. That really resonated for a lot of us as well.
It's heartbreaking, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah,
and it is. It's just when you see in your own lifetime, and I think as well, when you do your job, you're so much more aware of it than perhaps the average person, just because on a day-to-day basis, you're actually sort of tiptoeing through maybe a heavy news day on your channel. So at the end, you want to bring some nice weather, but also the reality of what you already, you know, what you already know. And yeah, and it has definitely, I felt just even in the last maybe even 3 years of my job, that kind of messaging has really changed. And but certainly there's much more joined up approach when you do have those events of like, you know, health services coming together, weather coming together, and we're all sort of saying the same thing, which is like, this will affect the average person. You need to just, you know, this is the basics of how to actually get through it. And obviously the science has come along now that we're able to attribute it to climate change. But do you get to focus on positive climate stories?
I do. I do a lot. One of the good things about my role here in Adelaide is that a lot of the reports that I do are location-based. So I am in studio sometimes, but a lot of the time we go out into the community because we do consider the weather forecast as our opportunity to get out into the community and also showcase some really positive things that are happening. So I love that I get to go and visit. I might go to visit a local school and do the weather forecast from might be their veggie patch where they're learning about sustainability, or going to the history festival and showcasing some, you know, there might be some grandmas who've been knitting, you know, their climate quilt or things like that that do, or they make me feel better to be able to be part of that and to show the positive, you know, elements that might not otherwise get that attention. And I do like that in a whole news bulletin where, you know, all the things that are going on in the world, that I get to have that little pocket at the end where I can say, look, here's a little bit of a, you know, pardon the pun, but a little bit of a ray of sunshine, you know, of something that we can remember as well.
And it's lovely to show people what the community is doing. There's so many amazing things that are being done out there, and we just need to shine a light on the amazing things that people are doing, because there's so many out there.
Yeah, and it's not like, it's not dramatic sometimes, so often it won't make the news because no one's died, and you know, it's not like there's no outrage, so it, you know, often these community grassroots projects are, you know, they're very peaceful and positive, and so sometimes they don't have the necessary ingredients of what normally makes the news. So you wouldn't know sometimes these things are happening in our community. And so yeah, it's nice. It's nice to be able to shine a light. I'm lucky that I do get that little window to do that when I can.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, over here, the statistics are that a weather presenter is the most trusted person on TV.
Really?
So, but yeah, that's what the statistics say. But
I love that.
Yeah, but we've just actually come back from something called the Blue Earth Summit. And every time we come back, we take the podcast and we try to talk to as many people as we can.
Oh, cool.
And so we always have take-home messages in our own heads. And, you know, like, well, what did you take for that, Gemma? What did you take for Sashi? And I think, we've said this anyway, but everyone always asks, well, what can you do about climate change? And the thing is, do something. So, like, I have a little, I pick up dog poo, right? Anyway, that's what I do. I one day my dog pooed on the beach. It was the most horrific thing, but my circumstances were, I was my niece was very distracted. I was with my mother, and I just genuinely didn't notice, and that's horrifying to me. Right. So I always make the assumption now that somebody didn't know that that happened, and so I go around and I think, talk to them. But that's one thing in a day, or you know, just making sure your tub is cleaned out before you can recycle it. But it's the do something, and it doesn't have to be big. It's
well, I think the dog poo thing kind of is big, because you're probably like saving lots of people from having ruined days as well.
I think of my buggy, the amount of times I wheel through my buggy into dog poo. Anyway, yes, but you know, do something. And then, you know, there's like 50 million adults in the UK. So if we all did one small thing, well, then that's 50 million better decisions. But it's lovely that you get to shine that light on those little bits of hope that actually you probably wouldn't see. And there isn't always a news agenda for.
Yeah.
But actually is really important.
Yeah, it is. Do you, I mean, are you guys, what about, I'm curious to learn about your roles as well, because like you're like studio based, obviously. Do you find that you're sort of in the thick of the forecast, or do you do those peripheral things as well?
Yeah, we do. Well, I do peripheral stuff as well, and we try and get outside as much as we can. And, but I mean, I think very, really similar to you. It's also kind of about delivering information in a non-scary way as well. You know, sometimes you get big reports, just breaking it down for people, but definitely always offering up the positive and the message of hope, and the good stories that are there, because little things do make a difference, because no one person, right, can fix it. We all have to, you know, it goes back to government levels. But yeah, it is hard. And it is hard, you know, there could be some horrible, like a top heavy half of the program, and you get to the bottom half and, you know. Yeah. Do you want to hear about the Paris Agreement? Probably not.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You know, so it's a balance, and every day is a balance. But I do think working in it gives you this, I think you get emotionally connected more to the climate and weather, just because you might be reading, I don't know, press releases or whatever that other people don't see. And you kind of think, wow, God, you know.
Yeah,
that, you know, and maybe you don't talk about it on the news because you've got weather to get through, or you know, some heat warning or something that's more imminent.
Totally, I think that is one of the big things. Is I tend to find myself often you're focusing on that immediate, like the immediate, what happened today, what's happening tomorrow, and then so it's a different thing to then have that time to be able to zoom out and give that more perspective. And you're right that when your head is in it and you're looking at the climate data and going back, and I do, and I go back and look what it was like, how, what does this compare to average, and that kind of thing. And most people obviously are not doing that in their day-to-day lives. And so sometimes it does feel a little bit like you're inside this, a bit like a horror movie or something, and you know the plot, but everyone else doesn't know the plot. Sometimes I even find I have to disengage a little bit, because otherwise I can become too, I mean, anxious, basically, like, you know, I think the anxiety
is a real thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you sort of, I don't know, sometimes I just find myself in a shopping center and I'll be looking around and everyone else is obviously going about their daily lives. and you're thinking, but don't you guys know?
Yeah. Or please don't buy all those products. Yeah.
But you're right. We do what we can.
I'd love to ask you, because in the UK, we love to talk about the weather. It's like there was stats out recently about how much we talk about the weather, how it's most people's opening thing that they go to when they meet someone new. Like, do you have that in Australia as well? Because you have some really extreme weather. Like, your weather out there is very different to what we have here in the UK, from wildfires to tropical cyclones. Like, do you find that in Australia, people are really keen to talk about the weather as well? Or is this like a very niche thing that we have here in the UK?
No, we love it. We are all about it. Like it's I would say, I mean, I'd love to see the statistics, but I feel like any conversation you have, like if you go to the post office or the checkout at the supermarket, you're going to talk with the person about the weather. Like that's what we do. It's hot, it's cold, it's raining. Do you think it's going to rain later? They said there were storms coming. And you know, like it's just always, you know, that's what we do. And it's funny because some people, obviously, when I'm going about my day, some people will recognize me from the TV, and so they want to know about it. And then other people don't know who I am and they're talking about the weather, and it's so hard when they might say something that I know is wrong, and I'll be like, no, I'm not going to correct them, I'm just going to like smile and be like, yeah, okay.
It's when so someone true. Says they say, and I'm like, I don't know if they did say that. I'm not sure that's what the forecaster did say on TV this morning, but okay, we'll sidestep that.
So you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. That's so funny.
I have colleagues. I could have, like, I have a gallery of people and I have colleagues and we'll finish up and they'll say, "What do you think it's going to rain for lunch?" And I'm like, yeah. Can you tell us about, so you mentioned about the time that you forecast for 48 degrees. Have you ever had anything else that you've thought to yourself, gosh, I just cannot believe I'm doing this?
Yeah, I think that whole period of time, so that was, I think that was in September. I had just returned from maternity leave, actually, and it started off in about September. And I remember, so for us, September is obviously the first month of spring, and we were starting to get these like 30 degree days and stuff. And I remember doing that and I was like, well, you know, I've been on maternity leave, like maybe... Like my brain's just not, maybe I'm remembering things wrong, but this feels unusual. And I'm going like, these are summer temperatures. And so the whole lead up to that period, by the time we got to December of that year, that was when I was doing the 48. I think there was even a 49. Like it was, I remember one night in particular, and it reminded me of what you said earlier, Gemma, about it wasn't just one place. It was lots of places that were all up in this, and, you know, even the 40, 44s, the 45s, and then some of the more outback areas were right up there. And I remember feeling extremely emotional then. And then that period led into what we refer to as our black, we had these big bushfires, our black summer. And I think I'm remembering the chronological order of this correctly. So forgive me if I'm wrong. But then that period of the fires just felt like a new level to be covering, because we were seeing the firefighters and they were saying things like, and these are seasoned firefighters, and they were saying, I've never seen fire behave in this way before. And that was a real something that really struck me, to hear about how far the fires were spotting so far ahead, and, you know, and the behavior of the fires seems to have taken on a new, like, life. And that really rocked me, because that was very close to home. We had fires in the Adelaide Hills, which is, say, you know, 20 minutes from my, or half an hour from my house, and on Kangaroo Island, which is this beautiful little coastal island, which is an hour or so away. So it was very, very close to home. And even, you know, in the air, because the smoke comes in, you know, you're breathing the air and you're like, I don't know whether I should take my kids outside today because I don't want them to breathe in the smoke. So it's, I think that I would say that the memory of that summer, I would definitely not be alone when I say this. In terms of the psyche of Australians, that summer really, I think, was a big sort of a light bulb moment and a turning point for the national conversation as well. I think definitely not just me. A lot of people would remember that summer.
So like a before and after.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you might have, there's just some images that came out of Mallacoota in particular, which was over the border in Victoria, of people trying to escape in boats, and there were kids on the boats and they couldn't, oh, it's just, yeah. I think those images are really etched into the minds of a lot of Australians for sure.
Yeah, I used to do a bit of world forecasting, so we would have to be up on what was going on around the world, and I remember seeing the wildfires in Australia and we were like, couldn't believe what was going on. And there was images, as you say, of kids, and there was images of the wildlife. They were trying to rescue wildlife and stuff, and it was just like devastating. And I just couldn't believe what we were seeing. And like, we've never experienced something like that in the UK. We've had wildfires, but not to that degree. So yeah, I can't imagine.
Yeah, I think it makes us a bit nervous now. I remember when I was growing up, we always used to look forward to summer because summer was exciting. Summer was the month, like the season that you would always like, yay, it's summer. And now, I mean, I more so coming into summer now, I feel quite nervous. And a lot of the talk is often about, okay, people, you know, has there been enough rain? What, how dry is it going into summer? What's the load like? What's the moisture level like? Have the spring rains given us lots of growth that's now there? There'll be lots to burn. Like, these types of conversations are, that's part of our dialogue now going into summer. And it's kind of changed. I mean, for me, I don't know, I just find it quite a nervous time and quite stifling when that heat really sets in. It can be all encompassing, and Yeah, I don't know. You hear the songs on the radio about summer and they're all like happy and poppy and like summertime, yeah. And I just for me now it's like, I don't know, I don't like, it's still a great season, but it can be a very scary time. It's, you know, it's our severe weather season in Australia.
I don't think you're alone there, you know, in that kind of feeling of you know, like we had 4 heat waves this summer, for example. It just makes you nervous. You think, why, you know, that, and they're not just normal heat, you know, they're not just heat waves, they're like, you know, tropical nights, and we're not used to it. And also in Australia, I know that you guys like traditionally you burn, like every, you know, really experienced in understanding how to burn like bushland so that there isn't wildfire. So it's not like you're somewhere where there's not this huge amount of knowledge about how to manage these situations, and even with that, it's something that's becoming more difficult to forecast for.
And it's, I mean, once we get to, we have our fire danger rating days that go out, and once we get to a catastrophic forecast, I mean, basically what they're effectively saying is, if you're in a catastrophic area for that day, you just need to leave, because that's the fire authorities saying to us, to the people that live in that area, if a fire starts, we don't think we're not going to be able to get it under control. That's just the nature of the weather on that day. So like, you can't really, we have our amazing volunteer firefighters, but once, you know, you're catastrophic, you can't really rely on the fact that someone's going to be able to come and save you anymore. And that's, I mean, that's the reality of
evacuate.
I
want to ask you a little bit something about Australian weather. So I mean, Australia is massive, and if you didn't know, Europe can fit into Australia. I mean, it's so huge. And many moons ago, in another lifetime when I had no responsibility at all in the world, I flew into winter in Perth, and I drove north into the dry season, and then went east into, it wasn't the months, it was a tropical season. And then I traveled south into summer. And then I saw one of your posts recently about how there's 9 seasons. There's actually 9 seasons or something really complicated. Can you give us a little A to Z of Australian climate?
Okay. Well, it's really interesting. One of the things that I've loved learning about recently, because we adopted the kind of European or Western or English initially with our seasons, because we, you know, the settlers who came out here were from England, and then they had summer, autumn, winter, spring. And they sort of, I guess they would have picked up the seasons that they had in the UK and sort of planted them on Australia, but it doesn't really work here. And it's only even, I mean, like up the top, basically, you've got your wet season and your dry season, loosely speaking. And down the bottom, we do transition through more of like that sort of that typical summer, autumn, winter, spring, if you were to simplify it. But what's really cool now is that there's a lot of knowledge coming out about the indigenous seasons, because obviously there were lots of different groups living all around Australia, like hundreds of different nations and areas, and each of them had their own calendar and their seasons that they used to track the weather and the climate. And that stuff is fascinating, because you can actually go to your own local area. So I'm on Kaurna land with the Kaurna people, and their calendar has this really, you know, that's been developed over hundreds and thousands of years, this connection, and it's connected to what's happening in the night sky and which animals are coming out and which flowers are in bloom, and these signals from nature that signify the changing of the seasons, and the rains, which they call here the Kudlilla, which means the washing of the earth, which is when the rains arrive, when the season breaks. And I love learning about that. And that's where you get into some of the regions they all have 4 seasons, but with different names, and some of them might have 6 seasons with more detail. And then there's different numbers of seasons depending on where you live. And a lot of Australians are now enjoying learning about that, their local seasons, and it makes you feel so much more connected to the land and the sky around you, because it's really bespoke to, you know, your local area.
It's a lovely way to look at the weather and like look at the seasons and actually be in touch with what nature's doing. Like, nature has so many signs of when the weather's changing, and actually really noticing that that's the case. Like, I love doing that. And
yeah,
I'd love to look more into that.
I don't know whether it's age, though, that's done it to me, but I start noticing, like, you know, the bluebells, the snowdrops, bluebells, daffodils, tulips, and I'm much more in tune with that now. Yeah. And you're right, it's lovely. It really does connect you to, your little environment around you. Or if you travel somewhere else and they haven't come out yet, or they have come out yet and they're everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
It really does connect you. I think we need to come up with a few more seasons here, Gemma.
Well, we've got the ones like we have second winter, don't we? We have those, like, there's like a little list that goes around of people are like, oh, there's the first spring, second late winter, but they're not actual real things, but people have sort of noticed little seasons, changes in the season.
Yeah, four is not enough, really, when you consider all the different types of weather that we have.
Especially because here of a spring day, you could get four of them in the one day, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm from Ireland, and you could get all of them twice over, three times over, you know, like in one day. Can you go on and talk a little bit about your beautiful book?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Ooh. Yes.
We have to talk about it. Tell us the story of the story.
Yeah, the story of the story. So, yes, my book, it's a picture book for kids, and it's called Whatever the Weather, We're in This Together. And it's funny. It's really at its core, it's about embracing every day, you know, not just the sunny days. And it lets kids know that they're loved, you know, no matter what they're going through, from the sunshiny days to the rainy moods and everything in between. It's that idea of, you know, whatever the day brings, you are loved. And I think that I guess as a mother and as a TV forecaster, it's like this idea that we're meant to be happy all the time. I don't know where that idea came from, but it feels a little bit like as if you were to say that it's meant to be sunny all the time, and it's not. You know, we're meant to have all of the different emotions in the same way that we have all of the different types of weather, and we need the flowers to grow, so the rain, you know, for the flowers to grow. So it's just a really on the surface, it's a love letter, really, to our children, to let them know that they are loved, but also sparking that joy in the wonder of the seasons and our wild skies and the beauty of nature and the world around us, and hoping to sort of spark that inspiration and that wonder in our children as well. And so I wrote it with my friend, actually, Rebecca Ralph. She's an anthropologist who lives up the top of Australia in the tropics. And so we like to think that between the two of us, we kind of had a few of the different climatic zones covered. But it was funny because I was sort of really thinking about this idea of whatever the weather, you know, we getting kids out in the weather, whatever the conditions. And Beck at the time was going through some different circumstances in her family where she was really being required to kind of show up for her family in different ways with challenges that they were facing. And so she kind of brought this idea of we're in this together, that idea of the resilience. And so the two parts of what we were experiencing kind of came together to make this book.
God, it makes me emotional because, you know what, just what you've said there is actually my two favourite lines from that book were... Gumboots on, we'll splash in puddles, slipping into muddy cuddles.
Yeah.
And then the one that was, so when I'm near or far away, your star will shine and light the way, like teaching somebody how to look at me like this.
I'm thrilled to hear that because you guys are like the first, really, no one's seen the book yet because it's about to come out on shelves, but you're kind of the first people to see it. So thank you.
I feel really lucky.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. But, you know, it's interesting because when I first got the idea for the book, I was touring daycare centres because I was about to go back to work and I had my little boy and he was one and I was trying to find a daycare centre for him. And I would tour these centres and they had, a lot of them had like this, I don't know what they're like where you guys are, they had like this fake grass and then they had all these rules and they were like, you know, if the UV rating is over, I can't remember what it was, it's whatever it was over, they're not allowed outside. And if it's too cold, they're not allowed outside. And if it's too wet, they're not allowed outside. And if it's too windy, they're not allowed outside. And there was this idea of that we're really protecting these children from the elements, and they were proud of that. And I found myself thinking, well, when are they allowed outside? Because, you know, kids are meant to be outside and they're meant to have dirty hands from playing in the mud, and they're meant to be you know, learning to take risks of like, oh, this, you know, rock is a little bit slippery. What happens if I step on it here? And learn how to engage with the natural world around them. They're not meant to be cooped up inside all day. And that idea of really through this book, I love that you love the line about the muddy cuddles and that kind of thing, because there's so much joy to be had in all of the different types of weather, not just on the sunny days. You know, it's just, it's a wonderland out there, and the kids know it. I mean, you try and walk any kid past a puddle and they're going to try and jump in it. Like, it's kind of innate in them. It's almost more for us as parents as well to allow that joy to come through.
Kids are supposed to put their wallet ends on. They're supposed to jump into puddles. Like, I mean, if I thought I could get away with it, I would do the same thing. Yes, I would put my wallet and shoes on and I would jump in puddles. And like, we spoke to someone on the podcast about how we need to think about the weather and especially rain in a different way. And so at the weekend, my friend had said to me, should we go for a walk? And it was raining. And she was like, what should we do? And I was like, well, we should put our coats on and we should still go out for a walk. And we did. Yeah. We put our hoods up. We couldn't really hear each other that well because we had hoods up. But it was like we were listening to the rain falling. It looked beautiful. And our coats were wet, but we were absolutely fine. But I was like, why would you not go for a walk? It's beautiful. Just because it's raining doesn't mean that we have to stay indoors. So it's getting people to look and embrace with the weather.
Totally. I mean, we are waterproof at the end of the day. Like,
we can get wet. It's fine.
It's just invigorating. And it would have been such a different experience for you to be able to walk in the rain and hear the sounds and smell the rain. You know, like the smell of fresh rain is just, is beautiful, and it's invigorating.
It's intoxicating. Yeah. It's gorgeous.
One of my favorite smells, that smell of rain.
It's gorgeous, you know, and, you know, all these things that we're missing out on when we sort of, I don't know, this idea of, we've got to protect ourselves from the elements. It's like, no, we're meant to be out in the elements. Obviously, you know, with common sense, and I'm not talking about extreme weather, but there's a lot of fun to be had for sure.
There is. No such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing choices. Yes. That's all.
Oh, and I'm pleased to report I did find a daycare center that had these. They had this rack of waterproof onesies on the wall, and they were like, no, we let the kids outside every day. They rain, hail, or shine. They put the onesies on and off they go. So I was like, sign me up.
Yes, amazing.
Hooray. Going forward, are you going to write another book?
Oh, my God, I would love to. I've got ideas already for some characters that I've been developing, some little weather characters, and a human character as well. And I really hope, I mean, this is my first book, so I'm sort of new to the publishing world, but I guess I'm hoping if this one goes well, maybe they'll let me write another one. So everyone go and buy a copy so I can keep writing.
I have a sneaky feeling they will. This book is very very special, and there's definitely layers in it. I know we were talking about like muddy cuddles, but that's like your feelings as well, isn't it? Like, there's so much more wrapped into that.
There was a lovely warm feeling, like when I read the book, there was this like, it felt really comforting, the book. It felt like a bit like someone was cuddling you. Like, it felt really lovely. And like the messages, that the lines that Ash had picked up was the lines that I picked up, particularly about the looking at the stars. So like, we look at the stars and we are like, oh, that's loved ones up there. That's what we say to my nephew and stuff. So that really resonated. But I did, as I was reading the book, it did feel like someone was cuddling you. It felt really warm and comforting. It was a lovely book. So I think people are really going to love it.
Oh, I'm so thrilled. And isn't that just a gorgeous compliment? Because, you know, you write these lines that came into my head while I'm having a shower or whatever it is, and you write them down and put them out into the world, and you have no idea whether the meaning that, you know, I'm so glad to hear you guys picking up on the meanings that we were hoping for. And with Beck, I think it was even Beck who put the line in about letting your star shine, and to know that it's being received in that way is just a real joy for me, because that's exactly what I had hoped for. So my sneaky plan is working.
There's a couple of kids' books that I own that I've actually gifted to friends of mine. One of them is called The Invisible String.
I've
gifted it to grown-ups, and it's about how we're connected with this invisible string, and if you miss somebody, like you tug on it. And this is a book I will be gifting to friends, like grown-ups as well, because we had this wonderful author actually on the podcast one time, and there's something that really resonated with me after talking to her, and she's like, why are grown-up books not why don't they have pictures in them?
Oh my God.
Like, why don't they have pictures in them? What makes you think that we can't take something from a lovely grown up book, or, you know, I don't know, like somebody passes away or somebody goes away, or there's some joy in someone's life. Like, what makes you think that grown up shouldn't have like pictures in this? Why do you actually? So your book will be gifted to my friends. It's absolutely beautiful.
I'm so thrilled to hear that. And thank you so much. And it's such a good point about why don't our grown-up books have pictures in them? Like, now that you say that, like, it seems so obvious, but of course, like, you know, just that's one of the things I love about this book is the illustrator, Laura B's, just done the most beautiful job of capturing, I think, whimsical, you know, the wonder of the seasons and that feeling. Like, the words are just the blank canvas, really. It's the illustrator that brings it to life. And I'm so glad to hear that, because I did find myself getting a lot of joy out of those pictures, you know, when you can hold the book in your hands and look in at the little details that are in there that I even hadn't noticed myself when it was sent to me on the screen. It is a real joy, and it takes you into a different place visually. Like, it's a different part of your brain, I think, than the part that processes the words. So I think we should need more picture books for adults.
Gifting a book to a friend's child, I always read the book before I buy it. And if I enjoy it, I'm like, I think that's a good book. But one of the things you mentioned about the illustrations in your book, one of the things I really liked about the illustrations was there was a lot of diversity in the characters that were used on the page. And that really stood out. And I really liked that there was loads of different representation in there. It was lovely.
Oh, I'm so glad. I can see, I love that you've said that, because it's funny because I can see so many of my different friends in there. Not that the illustrator has done it on purpose, but I can see my community kind of being represented in that book, even down to one of the little girls has glasses on the page, and my daughter wears glasses. And so I just think it's nice for people to see, you know, to be able to see themselves in the book is really special, and it's not always the case. Normally, often the characters can all kind of follow that same stereotype. So thank you. I think that's really beautiful.
Like, what was your initial feeling when you saw the book for the first time? Like, I'm always interested in, like, because you see people that open books on social media and like, oh, this is my book. But like, what does that actually feel like? What did that feel like for you?
Yeah. It's so funny you say that, because the point where I experienced the emotion was not when I thought I would. So I did receive the book, and I've seen what you're talking about when people open the authors that I follow on Instagram, they open the book for their box of books for the first time, and they say, oh my goodness, I've just received this box of books, and they open it up on camera and they have this, you know, amazing emotional reaction, or they burst into tears or whatever it is. And so I got like a friend to film me opening the box of books, but I didn't like, it was a really special moment, and I did feel the poignancy of it, and it was amazing. But it was a couple of days later, actually, and I just was sitting on the end of my bed, and I just sort of picked it up, and I was on my own, and that was when I looked at it and I really started flicking through the pages and looking at the details, and that was when I just burst into tears, because I was like, you know, this is let alone it's been 3 years in the making of just that it actually exists and this meaning is there, and then that I can read this to my kids. And then a few nights ago, this melted my heart, because I have written a lullaby to go along with the book, and it takes the words, the lyrics or the words of the book, and turns it into this lovely lullaby that you can sing with your child while looking at the pictures of the book. And it's this very gentle melody, and I've been singing it around the house, like practicing, and I heard my daughter lying in her bed singing to herself, going, whatever the weather, like singing this book. And I just, oh my God, my heart, I was just like, oh, she's singing the book to herself in bed.
I'm feeling that. Oh my goodness.
I'm like just like turned into a puddle on the ground. Like, I'm just melting.
Do you know what? I cannot wait to see where this book goes and where it brings you next. But I have no doubt it's going to bring a lot of people a lot of joy and love and ways to talk about things when sometimes we don't have the words.
Yeah, I really hope so. And thank you for saying that. And I think you're right about ways to talk about things as well, because kids, you know, it's really like kids are fascinated by the weather and they're always watching. They know, like, have you ever seen like kids like looking at a rainbow? Like you look at the look on their expression on their face and they're in absolute awe. And so it's a really simple thing that they experience and see every day. So to be able to use the weather to then as that playful metaphor for life, and the unpredictability of life and the different emotions that we feel and that idea of that we are in this together, whatever the weather. I think that that messaging is, it's kind of easy for kids to understand because they already understand what the weather is. And I know my little girl, she has said, yes, Mum, this book is about the weather, but it's also about whether I'm having a happy day or a sad day. You know, she gets it. And she was able to articulate that as a four-year-old. And that really made me think like, oh, I've done my job well here. That, and you know, if other families can appreciate it on those two levels of A, getting to have that beautiful conversations with their children about how much they love them no matter what they're going through. It's like, I love you when you're having fun in the sunshine in the park, and I love you when you're having a meltdown on the kitchen floor. You know? You are loved, you know, no matter what emotions you're experiencing. But, and then also I hope, you know, to have that spark and that joy about nature and our world and our environment and you know, starting that, planting that seed young when our kids are young to be able to appreciate the wonder of our weather. I hope that it does have that impact on families. And thank you so much for your kind words, because you might make me cry again now.
But it's true. It is, and it's also a little subtle undertone of just always choosing kindness as well. Yeah. And I think if you can choose kindness in the world, that's the best decision, you know, for everybody. But yeah, it's beautiful. We can't wait to actually get our hands on an actual copy and start reading it. Gemma, shall we, it's actually time to move on to our get to know me round.
Okay,
so we're going to move on to the get to know me round. So it's some quick fire questions. We always say quick fire, but there's always some follow-up questions that follow, but they're random. There's a couple of weather related ones. And then the other ones are just, you'll really notice they're very, very random. So we always start, which is actually, it'd be an interesting one to ask you actually, what is your favourite season? It doesn't have to be a traditional season. It can be one of the transitional ones as well that we've learned about. Well,
this is a big topic of conversation in our house at the moment, because I've been having my son, I've always said recently that my favourite season is autumn. Because after the intensity of summer, it feels, but. It feels
this
like...
This guy was a big fan until this moment.
Yeah. And I do. I think in my heart, I'm an autumn girl, because it does feel like after the intensity of summer, you get to take, autumn just feels like a big deep breath. Like we go, and we can relax and the weather settles and the mornings become cool and the leaves turn. And, you know, I love autumn. But my son, who is 7, is a real spring boy, and he's been at me for about, I reckon, 6 months now. Mum, spring's the best season because the flowers come out and all of the reasons and the animals come out. And now we've just come into spring in Australia, and we've been out in the garden looking for signs of spring and noticing the blossoms. And every morning on the walk to school, there's a new flower or something in one of the neighbours' gardens that we'll notice. And so now and Donnie is saying to me, is spring your favourite season yet, Mum? And I did say to him the other day, you know what, Donnie, I think I'm swapping to spring.
I did that this year. Yeah, it's like me and you are the same person here, Jessica. I don't have a son doing it to me. I've got Ash in the background telling me spring all the time. I did the same thing this year. So I think in my heart, really? I'm still autumn. But this year I did say to Ash, I think my favourite season might be spring.
I just need to share some of the love into spring. Yeah. That's all. You can just spread the love. Love is exponential.
I think the symbology of symbology, is that a word? But it's you know, because the idea, and you know, maybe with everything that's going on in the world as well, we can get a bit depresso. And then the idea of spring coming out of winter, just that idea that there is light and that there is color and seeing the growth, the new shoots come on the trees, it just seems to have that extra layer of meaning as well. And I think that maybe that's why, you know, I find myself gravitating towards that messaging of spring as well, because it just seems to have such a beautiful metaphor for life.
Love it.
You've managed in the answer.
You've managed to keep us both happy.
Yeah, we're both happy after that answer. Yeah. This is the next weather related one, and then this is when they go random.
Okay.
What's your favorite type of cloud?
Oh, okay. This is probably a boring answer, but it would have to be cumulonimbus.
Loads of people say it.
Oh, do they? Yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah. Because of the energy and the presence and the way they bubble up, and they're just so beautiful, and they're just so, you know, they tower up and they're so imposing and powerful, but they're so beautiful at the same time. And when the light hits it from different angles, it's a work of art. It is a work of art in the sky.
I love it as well, because it shows you the top of it shows you what you can see, which is the top of the troposphere. So, like, you know, you've hit the stratosphere when you, and I love that. I'm like, because to me, clouds are totally my thing, but they are like the mechanism that shows all of the stuff that I imagine when I'm looking at forecast data, like the you know, the thermodynamics of everything moving around.
Yeah,
we're big fans of CBs as well.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, you can't go past them, really, can you?
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Oh, this is oh my God, if my son was here again, he's right into superpowers at the moment, he would have a list. I think mine would, this might not, it's not as adventurous, but I think if I did, I would have the power to make anyone tell the truth. I'd love to be able to. I don't know, maybe that
could you imagine?
Yeah, I know, but oh, how good would it be? To be able to ask someone a question and then for them to tell you the truth, like, that would be life changing. And also as a journalist, actually, you could make a pretty big difference in the world too. So I think I would go with the truth telling power.
That is something we've not heard before. Oh. And actually, I love it.
Ooh, good. Okay. That's good.
Interesting. Yeah, we could actually get. So it would also mean as well, if you were given a long-winded answer, you would accept it because you're like, well, I know this person is telling me the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. It would. Yeah. It would. I almost wouldn't want to know sometimes, but still, it would be good.
If you were a fruit or vegetable, what would you be?
A fruit or vegetable? I think that I would like to be a coconut.
No one's ever said that before. No.
Well, if you think about it, so Beck, the girl who I wrote this book with, she lives up in tropical North Queensland. They have these big coconut trees up there. And if you think about the life of a coconut, I mean, they're just hanging out in those palm trees in the beautiful tropics. They're hanging out by the beach all day with that beautiful tropical breeze coming in off the water and this beautiful environment. You know, if you were a coconut, oh, it would just be gorgeous. And then I guess at some point, you know, you might fall to the ground, but then you might end up in some kind of lovely tropical drink or chocolate or something like that, you know, if you think about where coconut gets used. That would be quite nice too. So I think coconuts have got it pretty good.
I like it. I love the metaphor of the journey there. I love that. That's awesome.
If you could invite one person to dinner, and it can be anybody at all from any historical time frame, or it can even be a fictional character, who would it be?
Oh my goodness. Okay, that's a really hard one. Any time frame. Because, like, you could go either way. Like, there's a part of me that just, I always have this part of me that I want to understand the world and I want to understand how people think. And I really like talking to people who I don't necessarily have a lot in common with, because I love, like, I just kind of want to understand how their brains work, if that makes sense. So there's a part of me that's like leaning towards, like, I'd love to spend an hour with like Donald Trump or someone like that who I have, you know, nothing in common with, but I would love to understand more about that person. And like, I wonder, maybe we do have things in common that, you know, I don't know. I love that idea of seeing where that conversation might go. But then there's another part of me that's like, I'd love to have a wine with Taylor Swift. So, you know, it depends if we're going down the serious route or the fun route. Maybe both of them together.
I think that's a brilliant answer. It's about, yeah, whatever your opinions are, finding common ground helps you go forward.
Yeah, it wouldn't be boring, that's for sure.
Then you can push out your truth potion.
Yes. Here, drink this truth-telling drink.
Yeah.
And the final question that we always ask everyone is, what's one thing that you wish everybody knew about the weather?
Oh, yes. I think I wish that people knew more about, like, in some ways it sounds obvious because everyone knows that the weather affects us every day, but like how it affects all the different parts of our lives that we don't necessarily think about. Like if you're, say if you're at the supermarket, you're doing the grocery shopping and certain fruits and vegetables might be more expensive because the farmers can't grow them if their land is on fire or underwater. And so that, like, you just think it's like the cost of groceries, but then if you take one step back, it is actually related to the weather and our climate. Or like go to a music, sometimes in Australia our music festivals get cancelled due to extreme weather. And so on the one hand it's like you just think, oh damn, I don't get to see my favorite band, but then you zoom out again and it's sort of like the climate and our weather is this big umbrella, pardon the pun, that is actually linking everything about everything we do. And on the surface you think, oh, like even as a journalist, or like, you know, we even have, like, this is, you know, a bit scary as well, but we have different diseases that are coming in to different areas with mosquitoes and things. And so in a newsroom you might look at the grocery story and think, oh, that's a cost of living story, and the mosquito is a health story, and the music festival is an entertainment story. But really, over the top of all of it, it all comes back to the weather and our climate. And I think if more people could make those connections, then we could probably get on the same page a bit more with the importance of some of this stuff.
I think that is a fantastic answer.
Me too.
Absolutely brilliant. I do have two annex questions for you. Sorry, Gemma. How do you eat your Tim Tams?
Oh, yeah.
How do you eat your Tim Tams? I believe that can divide relationships in Australia. Tell us about your Tim Tams.
I'm never organized enough to have something to dunk it in. So I'm just, you know, in it goes. In it goes.
And also, what is a super duper?
Oh, super duper. Oh, you don't have those. No, okay. Zupa Dupas are an iconic part of almost everyone's childhood. You would have something similar, but it's like those, wait there one moment. Exhibit A. This is a Zupa Dupa for anyone.
I
just grabbed a Zupa Dupa from the freezer. So it's like a colourful stick icy pole in a plastic wrapper that you cut the top off and then you push up the – do you guys have something like this?
Yeah, we do. We'd probably call them like an ice pop or something like that.
Yeah.
Mr. Freeze in Ireland.
That's right. Yeah, branded one. Yeah, like an ice pop. Yeah.
So this is, you know, this is just summer in a stick in Australia.
Excellent. We're learning every day. Yeah. Jessica, thank you so much for your very kind time today. We know you're busy and I really mean it from the bottom of both of our hearts. We just wish you so much luck with this book. I feel that there's something just very special there, and I think it's going to lead on to some very beautiful things and help people in ways that you probably won't hear for years and years and years, and then you'll just suddenly start hearing about how that little story has helped, you know.
Oh my goodness, no, thank you to you from the bottom of my heart. It's truly, truly meaningful to hear that this story is out there on the other side of the world and that it's given you meaning. And I know this sounds corny, but even if nothing else, like that, what you guys have said today means so much to me. So thank you so much, and thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Jessica. And if people want to check out the book, it's Whatever the Weather, We're in This Together. And if people want to follow you on social media, Jessica, where can they find you?
Yes, on Instagram, I do my little weather explainers and bits and pieces there. It's jessica.braithwaite, BRAITHWAITE, bit of a tongue twister. And I think I'm on TikTok as well with doing a similar thing. So they're probably the two main places, yeah.
You should definitely check out Jessica's Instagram. We have been sending each other some of your reels recently. They're very, very good. And it's a great way to see what the weather's like on the other side of the world. So really love them. It's been brilliant. Please subscribe, rate, review, and share the podcast with a friend. We'd love more people to get involved in this weather conversation. If you'd like to follow us on social media, we are For the Love of Weather, and we hope that you leave this episode loving the weather just that little bit more.
Thanks so much for listening. Bye, everyone.
Whatever the weather, we're in this together. I love you now, and I'll love you forever.